Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk from the RNIB. This is the show where we talk tech. It's as simple as that. I'm Sean Preece. I'm standing in for Stephen Scott this week. And, well, he's not on vacation. He's not on holiday. He's not ill. I'll be honest with you, I think he's just hiding in a storage cupboard somewhere, because today we're going to be taking a dive into gaming. Is it accessible? Can it be made accessible? What games are out there currently that we can enjoy as blind and visually impaired people? The trouble is, with Stephen Scott being the massive Grinch-like buzzkill that he is, he says he hates gaming, so I expect that's the reason he's not here today. But don't worry, I've got even better. I've got the brains behind the operation, Mr. Robin Christofferson. Hello, Robin.
Hello. I'm not a big gamer either.
Oh, right. Well, I guess that's the show then. Thanks for listening. I could end up on my own in this episode. No, please stay with us, because yes, in the first half of the show, we are going to take a dive into accessible gaming. But later on, we'll be taking a look at this week's tech news, including the new update to the Clue app. That's the iOS app that promises to get you from A to B without using GPS. But does it work? We'll take a look later on. And of course, later on today, we see the Google I.O. event. So that's always interesting, seeing what Google's going to be up to this year. New products, maybe, and new software. What's new in Android? Are you a fan of Google I.O., Robin?
I'm a fan of Google.
Yeah, well, that's good enough. Yep, so that's coming up later on. We'll take a look at what we can expect to see from the Google I.O. event. And of course, we'll be going through your emails. So there you go. Welcome to Tech Talk. Stay with us, because it's going to be amazing, or I'm going to make a terrible mistake and it'll be hilarious. Yes, welcome to Tech Talk. And first, before we jump into it, I just want to say, it's good to be back. I've missed this place. I mean, it's changed quite a lot since I was here. Robin, what have you done to the place? It's very clean and tidy now. When it was just me, Stephen and Tim, well, it was a pigsty.
Yeah, we've redecorated, we've refurbished, and it doesn't smell like a kind of a bloke's den anymore.
I'll be honest, I kind of miss that smell. Enough about Stephen. Anyway, no, he knows I'm joking. Look, I have been listening, and the content and the features, it's all been really good. And yes, even Stephen's been good, so well done.
He's a pro.
Sadly, I can't argue with that. Anyway, let's get into gaming. Now, I was really into gaming, as I think most of us were of a certain generation. I had the Nintendo and the Mega Drive, and then I moved on to the Amiga and the PC, Doom, Wolfenstein, Street Fighter 2, all the classics. And I've got to say, that did drop away the more sight I lost. I tended to move away from gaming, and it's strange for me. I tend to think that console gaming, at least, is not going to be accessible. I don't even really think about it. I've moved to the audio games that we have now since the smartphone and the smart speakers. Gaming for me, at least, as I lost more and more vision, it did fall away quite a lot. And you say you're not really into games either, Robin.
I'm not a fan of some kinds of games, let me put it that way. I think if you hear gaming or gamers, you probably think of serious gamers, and I'm certainly not that. I'm a casual gamer, and I love the games on the Echo, which we'll actually hear about a little bit later on.
Yeah, well, casual gaming, I think you're right. I think since the rise and the takeover of the smartphone, I think casual gaming has really blown up. And I think you're right. It used to be the realm of the uber geek, maybe, but that's definitely changed with the smartphone and, of course, the consoles. But as I said, I don't really even think about consoles as being accessible, but that is changing. Accessibility is being thought about, and, you know, in the Xbox and the PlayStation and even recently the Nintendo Switch, we are seeing accessibility features. Now, whether that relates to the actual game themselves or the consoles have got so advanced now, they're running their own little operating system, especially in the case of the Xbox, that's running Windows 10, basically. So we are seeing accessibility features on that side of it, and they are slowly starting to feed through to the actual games as well. So it is exciting times. but I'm definitely not an expert when it comes to accessible gaming. So let's find out exactly how accessible console gaming is now, because last week, Robin, you and Stephen spoke to James Kyle, an avid visually impaired gamer. Here's Stephen.
Okay, so James Kyle loves his games. He's with us here. Hi, James.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, Robin.
Hello.
Right, let's talk about games now. First off, how much can you see?
I've got quite a lot of peripheral vision. My peripheral vision is largely fine, but the centre of my vision is pretty rotten.
So would you be sort of looking away? How would you sort of look at the screen?
Yeah.
Side on almost? Not quite, but...
Not quite, but a little bit. You know, I do rely on my peripheral vision, maybe more so than the centre of my vision,
right,
for sure.
That was me for a long time. Do you find that your ability to play games is hampered by just pure eye strain and how much it takes a toll on you?
Yeah. It's on smaller devices particularly. You know, as the years have went on, I've found, right, okay, I'll take off my glasses and I'll hold it closer to my face. And, you know, I've been getting bigger and bigger screens as I've got older, but it's chipping away.
It's when you buy a 65-inch television and you can't see it and you think, right, that's it, you know, I'm giving up now. But you enjoy your games. And what I think is interesting, James, is that in terms of consoles, you mentioned earlier you used the PlayStation 4 with the magnification feature. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, the PlayStation 4 has some accessibility features. I think they're a little way behind the Xbox in terms of accessibility. As you were saying earlier, the narrator hasn't quite made it over here on PlayStation, but the Xbox has that as standard built in.
Yeah, because there is a screen reader on the US consoles, from what I've heard, or whether it's just been rolled out across the States, but certainly there isn't a screen reader option that has popped up, and it hasn't appeared anywhere in the UK yet, and no one's talking about it here. However, you do have the opportunity to make text larger. Do you think that applies to the games? I think it just applies to the sort of operating system.
Everything accessibility wise on the PlayStation is at the operating system level, and yeah, it's very frustrating to see that those things aren't replicated in the games. Like the games should themselves be able to. They should be able to know when the operating system is set to large text or normal size text. So it's a bit disappointing that developers don't sort of have their text in games automatically adjust if the users or the operators of the PlayStation have their operating systems set to larger text.
I think that's a tough hill to climb there. You know, we're already trying to persuade people who create PDFs or web pages to make things able to reflect our own preferences. And there's a very broad audience there. And it's obvious to anyone, I hope, that blind people and visually impaired people are going to want to access that content along with everybody else. But when it comes to console games, people might say, well, you know, that sounds like a lot of hard work for people. And I don't even think blind people would play them. So, yeah.
Well, there are some games out there that blind people are playing on consoles.
Yep.
I mean, it's not necessarily games either that you would think that would be accessible to blind people. So, for example, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, the online multiplayer mode of that. Yeah, there was a chap recently, I think his name's TJ the Blind Gamer. I hope I'm getting that right. That's his sort of online handle on Twitter and things. And he was coming up to his like 7,500th player kill, which is...
Accidentally or... Intentionally.
He was playing the game. He was he sort of navigates the game by sort of learning the maps and identifying where other players are through footsteps and stereo separation on these headphones.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, I've played a bit of Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 myself online, and that's a pretty impressive kill count. That's how he must put in a serious amount of time. But even
who's,
then
I was going to say, who's got the time? But yeah, okay,
yeah,
good,
but he's
to. Great though. I mean, if he's able to do that, even though he can't see, you know, you're right. He's using all of the other tools that are there. He's using his hearing and everything else, which the game obviously caters for to some degree. That's interesting. Okay, look, let's talk about your podcast, because you started a podcast all around the kind of theme of, you know, I guess accessibility. You wanted it to be about disabled people playing games rather than just VI people, is that right?
Yeah. So the podcast is called Wheel Life Problems.
Ah, I see what you did there.
And yeah, it reflects the fact that a lot of the people making it have wheelchairs.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also me. Yeah, so it's, and that's available on iTunes and I believe the whatever the Google Android podcast equivalent is.
Brilliant.
And well, I think we should just add that no conversation about accessible gaming would be complete without a shout out to the brilliant Microsoft Accessible Controller that they brought out a year or so ago. You don't have to have use of your hands or feet. You can add in switches. It's infinitely expandable to cater for whatever your kind of reliable movement is, even if you can just puff down a tube or something. So yeah, that's really opened up a lot of console games for people with a range of physical disabilities.
James, very interesting having you in. I think you've changed my mind a little bit about the potential for gaming, although I think I might still avoid it like the plague, just because it's too much brain work for my eye work. Thank you so much for coming in.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you, James Kyle, there. That was really interesting. And if you are interested in that, then there will be a Geek Out special with a much longer interview with James, so check that out later on. You'll find that and everything else on the RNIB Tech Talk podcast feed, so search your favourite podcasting app for RNIB Tech Talk or just ask your smart speaker. I think you made a really interesting point there, Robin, about the Microsoft Adaptive Controller. I mean, Microsoft and accessibility, they're doing so much work lately, but that one in particular, it covers a range of disabilities.
Absolutely. As I mentioned there, almost infinitely expandable. I think it's got 16 ports for plugging in different switches and other devices. So as well as the huge buttons and joy controllers on the device itself, it's actually a very popular controller for able-bodied gamers as well. So yeah, I mean, arguably it actually makes it a lot better, a lot more accurate and precise. So, you know, able-bodied people would benefit from it as well.
Are you saying they're going to be cheating and using our hardware?
I don't know. I mean, you know, every little bit helps kind of thing. So it's inclusive design, isn't it? It's better for everyone. So yeah.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, really, really good. Yeah, that longer interview, James also mentions how somebody plays Diablo 2, that same blind chap. And so, yeah, there are definitely visually impaired people playing console games, but as Stephen said there, it sounds like a lot of hard work. Yeah,
so, it does, it does. But look, okay, I may be slightly controversial here. So, okay, buckle up, here we go. Jamie mentioned, I think it was TJ the Blind Gamer there, the guy that's playing Call of Duty, you know, and using the audio aspects of the game to navigate around and get that amazing score, which is great, which is amazing. But is that as fun as a sighted person playing the game? Are we having as much fun? Are we getting as much out of it? Or is it a case of just trying to smash the stereotype and playing the game just to show people that we can? Is it a case of, in so many areas of our life where, you know, you're dismissed as, you can't possibly do that because you're partially sighted, you're blind, you're visually impaired, whatever. You can't possibly do that. And sometimes you kick up against that and, you know, well, I'll show you. You know, I'm just wondering, playing these games, are we getting as much out of it as we should be, or is it a case of just, I want to show you that I can do it? Because gaming is all about fun for me, and I don't know if any level of accessibility can ever put us on the same level when it comes to enjoying the game as a sighted user. I don't know, is it feasible or is it plausible to make these games really accessible to us?
I think feasible, definitely. Realistic, is it reasonable for us to suggest that developers, you know, layer on or consider at every stage inclusion, full inclusion right across all the disabilities in these, you know, fast action shoot 'em up console games? I don't know. I don't know if it's reasonable to expect that. I don't think it'll ever happen. But there are very avid gamers out there who are really squeezing the most accessibility out of games that haven't had it built in. And I mean, for me personally, I am super uncompetitive, so I don't care. If I was going to do a game, I would just do it if it was fun. And actually, in the longer interview, do go and have a listen when we put it up in the feed, because Stephen admits that his most fun game is actually a VR-based one where he drives a bus. And he just mows people down, which is, I think, in the
worrying
interview there, why he references, on purpose, does he kill these? Because, I mean, his kill count is definitely higher than 7,000, but he finds it fun, so why not?
Well, see, that's a good point. And I'm saying, just because we play these games, does it give us as much fun as mainstream or whatever? But Stephen says he doesn't like gaming, yet I often hear him, he'll strap on the VR helmet and he'll jump in his bus on Grand Theft Auto and just drive around and, he's not actually playing the game as it was designed, maybe. He's just having fun and relaxing. But yeah.
He doesn't like gaming, he likes maiming.
Yes. But, I suppose he is getting enjoyment out of it, so...
Absolutely.
But the thing I worry about is that I'm saying that, is it reasonable to expect these games to be made accessible? And as you say, there's different genres of games as well. Arcade games, first-person shooters. How do you go about making these accessible? And is it even possible to make these games truly accessible to us? The only trouble with that sort of mentality is that, well, that was the mentality of the whole tech world, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And if we carried on with that same thought, then we wouldn't be where we are today. People were always saying, well, how is a touchscreen ever going to be accessible? And it wasn't until the iPhone came out with VoiceOver, then, well, this makes total sense and it's totally accessible. It takes that one thing, that one step into accessibility, and people go, that's how you do it. So I am worried about myself for thinking that, well, you can't possibly make a first-person shooter game accessible to someone with no vision or very low vision and still keep the same fun and the nature of the game. You couldn't possibly make that accessible. That's actually what I think, but I don't like thinking that.
I think that if there are some easy wins, some low-hanging fruit that developers can build in, like clear footsteps that stop when you hit an obstacle, I don't know, 3D, almost like echolocation, whether that can be built in.
Yeah.
If there are some easy things that they can do, making it more high vis than, really dimly lit night action all the time. So yeah, I'm sure that there are some things that they can do to broaden the pool that it would be usable for. But yeah, definitely. And that kind of brings us on to the apps versus console or streaming consideration, because we've got Google Stadia and we've got Apple Arcade, which are two very recent, very significant gaming announcements, and they're actually providing a very different type of game. So Google Stadia are going to be streaming console-level gaming to devices like smartphones that haven't got the same oomph as you would need in a console. Yep. To deliver that experience, because they're going to be streaming it almost like a video, and the actions that you do on your end will be sent back. So you're really playing the game on the server. And as far as I can tell, all that's being sent to the device is pixels. So certainly for the likes of you and I, who might have to rely mostly on speech output, or in my case entirely, that's a non-starter. It's not a lot you can do with pixels.
No, there's not.
Whereas Apple, they are going completely the other way. Apple Arcade is going to give you access for a monthly fee again to, I think it was 100 plus titles, which you would run on your phone and that otherwise would cost money, either up front or in lots of in-app purchases. And they've said these are going to be able to be run on the device. They're going to be much more for the casual gamer. And I'm not hopeful, but I think that of the two, there's probably more likelihood that there'll be something in the accessible area for us VI gamers.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so glad you brought up Google Stadia, because wow. I mean, technically, let's get geeky here. Let's just for a minute, let's get a little bit nerdy. Technically, it's amazing, because what you're basically doing is playing a game on Google's computer.
Totally.
So it's almost like you've got a 5,000-mile controller lead cable plugged into Google's computer. And the technology behind that, if they manage to pull it off, that is, it's not been totally proven yet, but, you know, you press left on your controller to move a character left. That's got to be sent off to Google's computer. They've got to do that, running the game on their side, and then send the video back to you of your character actually moving. And to do that with no latency at all, no delay between pressing the control and the action happening on screen, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. I'm so technically excited about that. But that's aside the point. Although technically amazing, I'm really struggling to find any accessibility aspect to that, any positives at least. Whereas Apple Arcade, as far as I understand it, is just the ability to pay a monthly subscription, and that allows you to download as many games as you like from the Apple App Store.
Well, of these 100 unique titles that are Apple Arcade kind of their original titles, I'm not sure if it gives you more. And similarly with Google Stadia, it's you know, there'll be a number of titles available. But yeah, apart from the monthly subscription angle, they're completely different.
Yes, everything's going subscription-based. I'm not sure if I'm a fan of that or not, but hey, that's by the point.
Yeah.
Anyway, just going back to Microsoft for a minute with their adaptive controller, there was also some recent news about some work they're doing with virtual reality, and that's the Seeing VR Toolkit. Now, this does sound very interesting.
Absolutely. So VR, what's that all about for people with a vision impairment? Well, anywhere that you can look around using your VR headset, you could be in a 3D environment, like a virtual environment, or you could be in a learning classroom where you're, you know, doing an activity, or you could be mowing people down in a bus, as we mentioned earlier. But all of those environments can be made easier to see if, for example, you were able to up the colour contrast or even put nice visible high-vis outlines around all the objects or the doorways or the obstacles that you're seeing as you can move your head around in this 3D space. And I think that's what Seeing AR is promising. So it's able to take a VR experience, whatever that might be, and layer on some smarts that will automatically high-visify it for people with a vision impairment. So this is for people with some vision, but it potentially means that they're able to participate much more fully in VR going forward.
Well, that's right. And it sort of relates to what I was talking about earlier, is, you know, can we expect this to be made accessible? And then Microsoft come along with this set of 14, I think they say, software tools in this toolkit that will help low vision. And there is even some text-to-speech software in there as well that will read text out to you, specifically for virtual reality. The potential for this to reach visually impaired people and bring and be more inclusive to visually impaired people is really good. And again, Microsoft. I mean, who'd have thought it? This is the most boring company in the world. And lately, wow.
Absolutely.
Anyway, look, that's console gaming and the bleeding edge of virtual reality. But of course, there are games that are totally accessible to us. There are places you can go to find these games. I'm thinking Apple Viz. That's always a good place to start, Robin.
Absolutely. So obviously, there are very accessible games, a wide range on Android too. But when it comes to iOS in particular, I think that we've got such a wealth, you know, so many riches. And Apple Viz, if you go there, applevis.com, we spoke to Thomas Donville last week, and every year they do what are called Golden Apple Awards. And there's a game or sometimes two games that get a Golden Apple Award, as do apps in other categories. And those apps could be for iOS or could be for Mac. So yeah, this is very Apple related. But if you're thinking, I want to do something which is going to be super accessible and inclusive for me as a visually impaired or a screen reader user on my phone, then you could do a lot worse than going to appleviz.com and looking at their Golden Apple Awards. And there's some brilliant ones in there, ones that you may well be aware of, Papa Sangre, Words with Friends, so many, you know, Dice World, so many that are, you know.
Oh, Dice World. I mean, everyone plays Dice World, don't they?
Well, I've played it a couple of times, yeah. So there are really good, accessible, you know, not just text based, but also immersive audio games, etc. So yeah, check those out.
Yep, definitely. It's a great resource. I find so many things there. So that's appleviz.com, appleviz.com. And as you said, it doesn't have to be just card games or text adventure games. You might be surprised about what kind of game you can actually play. Which actually leads us nicely into Robin's feature about the games you can find on that speaker that we call Lady A.
I wanted to give a quick overview of the range of games that you can play with the A-Lady. Now, some of them require a screen. For example, with the Echo Show and the Echo Spot, you can actually play voice-operated versions of Tetris, it's called Falling Blocks, and Connect Four, it's called Connect Four. But most of them don't require a screen, so they are audio based, and that's really good for people with a vision impairment, for example, but they're just good fun. Now, there are so many skills for the A-Lady. There are over 30,000 in the UK skill store and over 50,000 in the US skill store, and many of those will be games. So I thought, how on earth am I going to be able to give you a summary of what games are available? So I thought, because we've done 800 episodes with Dot to Dot, I would look back over the ones we've covered because there's a really good selection there. So I started off by searching for the word word to try and find some word-based games. And there were 32 skills that had the word word in them, so that seemed like a good place to start. Now let's just start by showing you one called Word Slice. The idea is that you're in a kitchen and the chef keeps slicing words up and you have to try and complete the words by making the endings in each case, and you've only got 60 seconds to do it, so let's give it a go. Now I'm going to edit some of the skills that I'm going to show you here so that we can fit more in. Alexa, open Word Slice.
Welcome back to Word Slice. Let's get slicing. Your first slice is P-E-T. You have 60 seconds to come up with as many words that start with P-E-T. Please begin.
Petulant.
Wow. That word earned you 5 points.
Petunia.
Fantastic. That word earned you 4 points.
Petrol.
Wow. That word earned you 5 points.
Pet shop.
Fantastic. That word earned you 4 points. Nicely done.
Stop. Now, of course, many of the skills that we've covered and many in the skill store that are word-related won't include the word word in their title by any means. And here's a really good example, Harry Potter letters. This will ask us to provide as many words starting with a given letter as possible. Let's give it a go. Alexa, open Harry Potter letters.
Harry Potter letters is sponsored by Weasley's Wizard Wheezes.
Welcome back to Harry Potter Letters. Your current high score is 9 for the letter G. Making your highest Hogwarts grade, Peter Felipe Pettigrew. Well done. Let's play Harry Potter Letters. The letter of the alphabet is E. I'll start. My guess is Edgar Bones. It's your turn. Say something Harry Potter related, starting with the letter E.
My mind's gone blank.
How many butter beers have you had? Try again. Say something Harry Potter related, starting with the letter E.
This is terrible. Alexa, stop.
Okay. Mischief managed.
Okay, guys. That was a disaster. My mind went completely blank. Okay, let's move swiftly on. The next category is quizzes and trivia. And I looked through the 800 episodes, and we have covered 48 with the word quiz in the title and 45 with the word trivia in the title. So that gives you an idea of how many there are out there. Let's give it a go, and I'm going to stick with the Harry Potter theme here, and I hope I do better this time. Harry Potter quiz, the official one, guys. Let's give it a go. Alexa, open official Harry Potter quiz.
Welcome to the Harry Potter quiz from Pottermore Publishing and Audible. Is this your first time playing?
No.
Oh, yes, I remember. You were playing for Ravenclaw on OWL level. Would you like to change your settings?
No.
Okay. Here are your three questions for today. If you need more time, just say repeat. Question one. Who said this?
Longbottom, if brains were gold, you'd be poorer than Weasley, and that's saying something.
Who was it? Was it Pansy Parkinson, Vincent Crabbe, Draco Malfoy, Lucius Malfoy?
Draco Malfoy.
Before Malfoy knew what was happening, Ron was on top of him, wrestling him to the ground. Neville hesitated, then clambered over the back of his seat to help.
Merlin's beard! You're right! That's 10 points!
Stop.
Thanks for playing.
There you go. And there are so many other quizzes like that, even including classics like Jeopardy. Alexa, open Jeopardy.
This is Jeopardy!
Thanks, Johnny, and welcome, players.
The first category is Presidents by Dog. A statue of Fowler, this president's dog, is part of his Washington, D.C. memorial.
Oh, dear. Nixon?
The correct response was, who is Franklin Roosevelt?
Alexa, stop.
See you next time.
I knew I wasn't going to do very well there, guys. And the last category we're going to touch upon is my favourite. It's adventure games. Audio adventure games. And there are there are lots of them. I did a search for the word adventure, for example, and I got 18. And we'll look at one of those. One that we covered recently was called Timeless Adventure. And you have to try and save America because somebody's gone back in a time capsule and is trying to thwart the Mayflower voyage. Let's give it a go. Alexa, open Timeless Adventure.
The capsule door opens. And you exit the compartment. You are immediately blinded by the bright sunlight. Before your eyes adjust, you can smell the warm, salty air and hear the sounds of seagulls nearby. You are near a dock bustling with activity. At the end of the dock sits a merchant ship.
Walk down dock.
You are at the end of the pier. There is a large ship docked that is readying for departure.
Stop.
Thank you for playing Timeless Adventure.
Now, of course, many games won't have the word adventure in them, and we'll look at a couple of my favourite ones here. There's one's called Bosch, A Detective's Case, and it's cool. Alexa, open Bosch.
There you are. I was just looking for you. Want to start from the beginning, or head straight to Nora's apartment?
Stop.
Come back when you're ready to get to work.
That one isn't for the faint-hearted, guys. And the last one I'm going to show you was the very first skill that we covered on Dot to Dot. It's called the Magic Door. Alexa, open the Magic Door.
Welcome back to the Magic Door. Our journey begins here with three roads. One leads to the mountains, another leads to the sea. The last is a spooky path into the dark forest. There is also a small mailbox to our right. Would you like to go to the mountains, to the sea, or to the dark forest? You could also open the mailbox.
Stop.
Okay, goodbye.
Guys, each one of those paths takes you not only on one different adventure, but they branch off into many different adventures, which can take you to spooky castles, to treasure islands with pirates. Wow, that one is definitely my favourite. I just wanted to give you a quick flavour of the games that you can play with the Echo. There really is something for everyone, and they're all free. Thanks, guys.
Wow, Robin, that was really good, apart from your brain freeze. But, I mean, there's so many suggestions there to get your teeth into. I've got to say, I have tried a few of those. I've tried the Magic Door. I've also tried one called Escape the Airplane. I thought that was fun. Frustrating because I'm thick, but it was fun, even if I couldn't work out the puzzles. But these games do work really well on the Amazon Echo.
Absolutely. Now, of course, there are some smart speakers with screens, and I mentioned a couple of games at the beginning there, and some definitely will use the screen, but there are so many. We're spoilt for choice, guys, and these are so affordable and so useful in other ways as well. Am I going on about the Echo a lot? Definitely go for it. They will give you all the gaming enjoyment you could possibly want.
Absolutely, and don't forget you can find more like that on the Dot to Dot podcast. Again, check out your favourite podcast app. But now, news.
News from the internet.
Oh, I've missed that jingle so much. It's good to be back. Anyway, so it is time for this week's tech news, and we're going to kick off with the Google I.O. event, which starts later on today. This is where Google will reveal what they're working on, what we can expect to see in the new version of Android, and maybe some hardware. It's not been unheard of to see hardware at Google I.O. events. So, yeah, always interesting. I love these tech events anyway. You know, the Apple event and Samsung, all of them. It's always interesting to see what's coming up. So the Google I.O. event starting today, running to May the 9th, I think. Robin, what can we expect to see? What's the rumours?
Well, yeah, quick rundown. So Android 10 is going to be given a lot more detail. We've had some rumours up till now, but yeah, really going to see a lot of detail about Android 10 that's going to be coming out a little bit later on this year.
I just want to know what it's going to be called. It's Q, so what's that going to be?
Yeah, who knows? Don't know. They've painted themselves into a bit of a dessert-flavoured corner there, I think.
I know. And Q makes it really, I can't even think of anything. But yeah, that's the main thing to come from Android 10 for me. What's the name going to be?
So some of the things that it's going to include are a system-wide dark mode.
Yay!
Which will be really useful for people with who need that kind of low-vis, or is it high-vis environment? Anyway, easier on the eyes, and that will be system-wide, and a lot of app developers will start building that in as well, because they don't want to be the glaring exception, excuse the pun.
Clever. And we are seeing that across the board. I mean, you know, the Windows and Mac OS. I mean, iOS 13, there's rumours that there's going to be a system-wide dark mode, if you don't already count Smart Invert as our dark mode anyway. Dark mode is just great, though, isn't it? And so overdue. It just makes it so much more, well, in our case, comfortable to use if you do use the screen, and that white glaring retina burning screen window or whatever comes on. It's hard work. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to dark mode.
Absolutely. And there are some battery savings to be made there if you have an OLED, an OLED display, where, you know, battery is taken up by lighting up pixels. So yeah, that's a good development. There is something about multitasking bubbles. Now, I'm not 100% sure, and the rumours haven't really elucidated there, but yeah, better multitasking, and expect the word bubbles potentially to be associated with that. Pressure-sensitive features. Now, I guess this is a bit like the Force Touch or 3D Touch on iOS. So it will expose more features, more functionality, more options when you press harder on things.
I'll be honest with you, I always forget about 3D Touch on the iPhone. It's something I never use. There's rumours that Apple are going to drop it from now on anyway, but yeah, by the time I remember it's something I could use, I've already opened the app and I'm already doing what I need to be doing. So yeah, but I am an old man, so... The actual idea of having the ability to shortcut into an app or whatever, you know, a right-click menu, if you will, it's a good idea in theory. I just always forget about it.
Yeah, and obviously long press, both long press, 3D touch and force press, I am always forgetting about too. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Better security and privacy. You know, they're definitely going to be leaning into that as well, because obviously that's a very hot topic at the moment, those are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then there's a lot in Android about foldables, and we haven't got off to a good start with foldables. There are going to be lots of folding phones coming out soon, guys. Watch out for the Huawei Mate X, which is probably going to be the next big one to make a splash. But yeah, so foldables, even though they've got off to a very rocky start with the Samsung Fold and all the problems that were had with the screens there in the models that went out to people, Android has a lot of functions in there that will cater for phones that have foldable screens. So they're probably going to be talking about those at Google I.O.
Wow, so that's it. Folding screens are here to stay. They're going to be the next big thing, I'm guessing, then.
Who knows? Who knows? Depends how well they do it, I suppose.
As long as the screen lasts longer than 5 minutes.
Yeah. And then there's a Pixel 3a, which is going to be an affordable version of the Pixel phone at around $500. That will probably translate into £500 as well.
Of course.
And guess what? It's got a headphone jack.
Oh, wow. Wonders will never cease. Yeah, I did hear about this one, and it is quite funny. The in quotes, affordable version, $500, but the way the pricing has gone, yeah, you can't knock anything that brings this technology into more people's hands, I suppose.
Absolutely. And just to be complete, a couple more rumours. So the Nest Hub, which is a thermostat, a smart thermostat or home hub, to be able to control all of your smart home, is now getting a 10-inch screen. So that's going to be a new version that's going to be coming out. And finally, there's going to be some updates on Core AR, which is a bit like AR Kit that we see on iOS. That's going to be helping people with augmented reality. Android Wear will have some updates, as will Automotive Android, which is, you know, the in-car experience that's based on Android 2.
Wow, well done, Robin. That was a complete list. Yes, so that's the Google I.O. event coming up later on today. You'll find it. Just search for it. Google it, in fact, and I'm sure you'll find a live stream. So, yeah, take a listen. Now, we are running short of time, and I definitely want to get some emails in. So let's move to the next story, which is the Clue app. So for those of you who haven't heard of Clue before, it's a iOS app that allows you to record a route. So let's say you're at reception at a hotel and you get guided to where your room is. You can record that route as you go. And then later on, you can play back that route and Clue will tell you, go forward for so many feet, take a left, then go down the stairs, and it can guide you back to wherever that route started and vice versa. So yeah, it's really good, especially for indoor navigation, because it doesn't use GPS. What it uses is Apple's augmented reality kit. Like Robin mentioned there earlier on with the Google I.O., they're announcing something about AR. So it actually uses the camera to recognize objects and landmarks on that route. It uses that information to help guide you, and also the sensors in the phone itself. In this new update, they've actually added the ability to record your route, which was something that the first version didn't have and was definitely lacking. So you could only use it once and that was it. So the ability to record a route, and in the next update, they're hoping to add the ability to share a route. So someone else could record a route when they're at a location and they could send that one to you. So, you know, you could use that route when you get there. Absolutely fantastic. I'm excited by this, Robin.
Yeah, I mean, particularly the sharing thing, which, like you say, will be coming up very shortly. for sighted people to do the route in advance and then just send it to you and then you're good to go. The original Clue app I raved about, and I wrote a post about it on AbilityNet website, and it was super accurate. And, you know, as we were talking about ARKit a moment ago, that's exactly what it uses. Like you say, it actually looks at what you're passing by and can do smart things with object recognition to be able to calculate the distance and the turns, etc. And it uses the accelerometer and the compass within the phone as well. Now, the new development is probably, it's probably just me, it's probably user error, but yes, I cannot get it to successfully record a route. You have to at the beginning and the end of any route that you want to record and then save. You have to make a milestone, as it's called. And that, from a UI point of view, the, you know, the way that it's set out and how it asks you to do things is way above my intelligence level to fathom. And I don't think I'm doing it right, because even when I've saved a route and then I go back and try and retrace my steps, it takes me into walls. It takes me at 45 degrees into a, you know, I'm like, it's because it does this nice ticking noise now, which says, hey, you're going in the right direction. Keep going.
Yep.
And it kind of goes right back to the beginning where that TJ chappy walks into walls, and when he hears the footsteps stops, he knows he's hit a wall. I mean, that's like me. I'm trying to keep walking and I'm, you know, it's telling me to keep going. My nose is pressed against a wall. So, yeah, I don't get it, but maybe it's me. I can't help thinking, though, that we need another update, because this is like an alpha at this stage. It's not even a beta, but yeah.
I think you're right.
It was brilliant in the first implementation, and I'm not sure about this one. Have you had any more
luck? Well, I thought it was fantastic. I had total success with mine. Now, I haven't used it a great deal, as in saved a lot of routes, but the routes that I did try, it was spot on, and I mean perfect. I know exactly what you mean about the user interface, though. I feel exactly the same. It does seem a little bit confusing, and I'm not entirely sure how I got it to work at the beginning, because you do have to, I think it's actually called a landmark. You need to start a route with a landmark, and you need to hold the phone flat against a surface. And I mean, it was okay, but it didn't really hold your hand and go through the steps of what you needed to do. So I was able to save a route. I went from the kitchen to one of the bedrooms upstairs, and it worked really well. And then when I got up there, I paused the route and it allowed me to save it. And then I reversed it and went, it showed me the direction from the bedroom back down to the kitchen. And yeah, it was spot on in my experience. But I think you're absolutely right. The user interface definitely needs some work. But the potential, again, it's all about potential. The potential for this is, I think, really good.
Totally. Because the only other choice when it comes to indoor is to either what they call dead reckoning, which is using the accelerometer and the compass within the device to make a best guess as to how far and how fast and how much you've turned, and that's not accurate enough, or to plant loads of Bluetooth beacons around the place, and you can't expect the whole world to beaconize so that blind people can use this technology.
I like that, beaconize.
So yeah, there's huge potential here, and I can see us wearing a very discreet, you know, camera on our lapel or on our in our glasses, and this technology really working for us in the future. And yeah, I'm going to keep persevering, because it's probably me.
Yeah, I think it probably is you. Give it another go. But I see it, the convergence. You can see the convergence happening of all these technologies. You know, when we do get wearable smart glasses, and we see all these 5G, the internet connection, and all these technologies are coming together, wearable tech and this artificial intelligence and object recognition, you can start to see such uses for it. And I think this is just a glimpse and a great demo of what we can expect. So yeah, I thought Clue, amazing. Actually, staying with the navigation theme, there was an app that I'm hearing quite a lot of talk about. It's been at the same level as Blind Square in some places, and Blind Square for me is like the pinnacle of navigation. I love Blind Square. And that's an app called, oh no, the name, let me try it, Lazarillo?
Yeah, let's call it Lazarillo. Lazarillo,
oh,
if you're going down
the
Italian route. It's got a double L at the end, like paella. Anyway, so this Lazarillo is what David Woodbridge of Vision Australia has been talking about and demonstrating. He thinks it is as good as Blind Square, but this is the big thing. It's on Android as well. And unlike Blind Square, it's free. So it's aimed at people with a vision impairment. It's got all of the juicy features, or many of them, that Blind Square has. And in his experience, it's better on trains and buses as well. It gives you more information as you're going along compared to Blind Square. So yeah, have a look, guys. Lazarillo. And I should probably spell it out. Lazarillo, guys.
There you go, and that's available for iOS and Android. Definitely, I will check that one out. Thank you. Okay, I've been waiting to play this jingle the whole show. I've missed it so much. It's time for your emails.
Email.
Yes!
We
yes!
get email.
Yes!
We get
yes.
your email
it's
every
true.
Day.
Ding dong.
Here's your mail today.
Ah, that feels better. I'm home. Yes, it is time for your emails. Now, sadly, I can't read these out. I haven't mastered Braille yet, so I'm going to get the voice synth to read them out for me. But, you know, we're used to that, aren't we? We're all okay with that. Here we go. Here's the first one from Nadia.
Hi, guys. You said to let you know what apps people use most. I am an app phobic, if there's such a thing. I avoid them wherever possible, preferring websites and good old-fashioned keyboards. However, I needed to identify some meat in the fridge, so I plucked up the courage to use the Be My Eyes app. I installed it on your recommendation, but this was my first time. It couldn't have been easier. I called someone. She was very nice and it was really easy. There were only a couple of buttons on the screen to choose from, which made it so much simpler. My only bugbear was that I needed help signing in, but once that was sorted, it was brilliant and definitely an app I will use again. It's even made me more confident to try some of the others on my phone. Take care. Nadia.
Thank you, Nadia. There's nothing like mystery meat that needs identifying in the kitchen. That's, but Be My Eyes. I mean, you know, I've never heard a bad thing about Be My Eyes. I can only agree with you totally. Be My Eyes is just amazing.
Absolutely. And going back to David Woodbridge, he mentioned something that's Australia only at the moment, but I don't see why it can't come to us, you know, to an app store near you sometime soon. It's called Be My Guide, and it's exactly the same, but you can actually just have a group of friends that it circles between when you want assistance, rather than the hundreds of thousands of volunteers in Be My Eyes. So yeah, if you prefer that, then keep an eye out for Be My Guide coming to us.
Oh, that sounds like a really good idea, because some people can be a bit intimidated by talking to strangers. So, yeah, sounds fantastic. Thank you, Nadia. Let's get to the next one. We are running short of time. This one is from Sarah.
Hi, Stephen and Robin. I have been listening to the Tech Talk podcast for years and just wanted to get in touch to say how much I enjoy listening. There are a couple of things I have been meaning to email you about for a while. Recently you had a guest on to talk about Orcam, amongst other things, and I would like to give you my experience with the device, which is quite different. You had a report which showed it being quick and easy to use, and then your guest talked about how difficult she found it and that she had to take the device off the glasses and wave it around to try to get it to work. Well, my experience of Orcam is, I guess, in the middle there. I have been using Orcam for over 2 years now, and I would not be without it. I would say that in the kitchen I find it useful to identify all my different types of tea and cans, etc., and it works well for that. Once I knew that I need to find the join of the label on the can, and point there, it is accurate and does not take long. Sometimes it picks up extra text like ingredients, and that can be enough to identify the product, but it can take a few tries depending on light. I have practiced lots and I suppose I have got the technique. It may also help that I lost my sight completely only 6 years ago, so I can remember what packaging layouts look like. I really wanted the Orcam to be able to read my post in private again, and that is so important to me. I also love reading magazines and use it for that, especially on holiday. It feels so nice to be able to do the small things in life that I remember, such as getting the Sunday paper and sharing the sections between myself and my husband and relaxing together. Just yesterday I was out in the garden and my son came up to me with his football annual and said, "Mummy, would you like to read this with your Orcam?" And we were able to spend some time reading all about Ronaldo and his best matches ever. These experiences are what make the device so wonderful. It does take some mastering, but after a few months I was so pleased with the results. I have been able to record the faces of other moms in the playground, which is so useful, and also my family and mate, so I can tell who is in the room. I have just started reading a full novel using Orgum as an experiment, as I usually read Braille, and it is working really well. This gives me another format to read in, and different formats work for different situations. Having Orgum attached to my glasses takes the frustration out of reading text, as it is so immediate and accurate. I would say that Orgum is well worth the price tag for me, and anyone considering it should think about what they want it to do for them in particular, and whether they are willing to take time to figure it out. Of course, it won't suit everybody. Finally, I wanted to encourage Stephen to continue to learn Braille, as I find it brilliant and use it every day. I look forward to future podcasts as always. Best wishes, Sarah.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. That was a lovely email. And I hate to say it, but Stephen is just smashing Braille. He's loving it, and he is keeping up with it. So thanks for that. And when it comes to your experience of the Orcam, yeah, just like any other piece of specialist kit, really. You know, some people will find it incredibly useful, and others may not get on with it at all. So it is one of those things, like everything else, you need to try it for yourself and see if it helps. But in your case, you know, reading the papers and reading with your son, what sort of price can you put on that? And I'm glad you're loving it.
Nothing to add there. Really, really good points.
Absolutely. Sadly, that's it. I've run out of time. Gordon, Kelly, I'm so sorry I didn't manage to get your emails in. We will get to them. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Let us know what you think about anything you want. In fact, just bully Stephen and Robin. I don't mind. I won't be here. So that's it for another episode of Tech Talk. I've just got to say, it was so much fun to be back. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Stephen. And thank you, Robin. You were amazing.
So were you, Stephen. You don't have to come. Oh, no. Stephen, where are you? No. Thank you so much. It was fun.
Thank you, Robin. I've got to say, Stephen does make it look easy. Anyway, again, that email address, if you want to get in touch with us, is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And don't forget that podcast feed as well. Just search your favourite podcast app for RNIB Tech Talk. You'll find lots of stuff there, including that extended interview with James Kyle about gaming. So do check that out. And next week, actually, I will be back. And not only me, but joining me is another blast from the past, Mr. Tim Schwartz. We will be doing a special episode of Tech Talk next week. There's a cliffhanger and a teaser for you. Again, guys, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.